I looked into Solomon, and this is true. The more I look into Solomon, the sorrier I feel for the guy. And the happier I am that I'm just me, and I'm just here on this earth passing through. I don't have to go through all this spectacularity, and I can just be myself. You can't believe what an advantage that is until you see somebody like Solomon having it all and finding it a burden. Not only that, but finding it really useless, except as an example to us. Let's go on in chapter 2, or on verse 12. Hi, everybody. Martin Sender here. Welcome to another edition of the Revelation series. Then I turned around to see wisdom compared with raving and frivolity. For what will the man who comes after the king do beyond what others have already done? Solomon seems to suggest that there's a greater burden coming on those. And we all want to do something new. I remember A.E. Nock saying, the author of the book we're going through here, The Unveiling of Jesus Christ, the truth is truth. This truth that we love and that I write about and you talk about, it's old. It's been around a while, and nobody invented it. Nobody can improve on it. The truth is truth. But we all have our unique presentation of it. And Mr. Nock, like anybody, was critical of his own presentation, and he thought, you know, other people have really done this better than me. He compared himself to some great writers of the past. I don't know, Luther. I don't know why you'd compare yourself to Luther, because we have more truth than Luther. You realize that? Famous guy like Martin Luther, and we have more truth than him. Anyway, Nock ended up saying, you know, the world doesn't have a article by A.E. Nock. I mean, we had Luther, we've had all the greats from the past, but there's not an A.E. Nock book yet, so nobody can put the slant on it that I can. I'm unique. This sounds corny, but yes, you have a unique presentation. You have a unique way of doing things. It's unique to everyone else. The truth isn't unique. The fact that you're writing, that's not unique. So this is what Solomon means. There's nothing new under the sun. There's no new ideas. There's no new anything except the individual presentation of a thing. So people will come after us, assuming we're going to be a little longer on this earth. But no, I don't buy it. We're the last generation. I don't accept that I have to consider what's going to happen with people who come after us. And I saw there is more advantage for wisdom than for frivolity. Okay, that's good. Just as there is more advantage for light than for darkness. All right. Well, we have a upbeat revelation here that wisdom is better than frivolity. That's the first really bright spot here. Frivolity had its purpose, but wisdom is far exceeding it, as light exceeds darkness. The wise man uses his eyes in his head, while the stupid man walks in darkness. Yet I realized indeed that the one destiny befalls them all. So he'd rather be wise than stupid. Verse 15, so I said in my heart, since the destiny of the stupid man is also mine, and it shall befall me, same, right, true, the stupid man dies, and the wise man dies, to what advantage then have I been wise? May I answer that question, Solomon? The advantage is that we have this collection of writings from you, and we know what not to do. Hence, I spoke in my heart, this too is vanity. No, it's not. Verse 16, for there is no remembrance of the wise man or the stupid man for the eon. And yet here we are, Solomon, reading your words 4,000 years after you wrote them. So you're wrong about that. There is remembrance of the wise man. The stupid man, no. We don't have a letter from Ralph, who lived down the road from you and was a stupid guy and just wrote a bunch of nonsense. Nobody knows about Ralph. Nobody has any remembrance of Ralph for the eon. But you, that's another story, my friend. In the days which are already coming, everyone is forgotten. The last, the wise men, dies along with the stupid one. Yes, you and Ralph are both dead, but you have lived into a... You possess today a measure of immortality because your words are with us. This letter you penned in haste and frustration and really really. Despair is now ours for the picking, for the taking. So I thank you for that. Now, I'm really sorry to read this next verse. Then I hated life. But in a way, I'm encouraged because I have gotten to this place. Have you? I hated life. And I think that's somewhat of a healthy disposition. Many people disagree with me. But doesn't John say in one of his letters, if you love the world, you're at enmity with God. So loving the world, yeah, you're right, it's not the same as loving life, is it? Yeah, I do hate life sometimes. Don't tell me life's too short. Life's too long. For to me, the work was evil that was done under the sun. And the evil I find of the work in this life is the repetitiveness of it. What we started with in chapter 1. That the same things keep happening over and over and over again. And there's seemingly no end over and over. Over and over again. To some people, that's a great thing. Well, it's, at least I'm waking up. Well, sometimes, don't you get this feeling? It'd be better not to wake up. I felt that way. And Solomon has too. And at one point, the Apostle Paul says, we were despairing of life. Same thing. The Apostle Paul, look at this. I don't know where it is, but he was at this point where they were beaten down. And they were beaten literally. And he was despairing of life. Same thing. Then I hated life. Job at one point said, oh, I would that I had never been born. So everybody gets to that point where you hate life. And somewhere in, not this letter, but Proverbs, doesn't Solomon make another statement about life and death? I'm not going to venture into it because I can't think of that particular verse. I hated life. To me, the work was evil that was done under the sun. Solomon, in another place, presents the sun as gasping back to its place. So even the sun is weary with continuing to be a giant ball of hydrogen. For the whole is vanity and grazing on wind. I hated all the fruit of my toil, for which I was toiling under the sun, that I would leave to the man who shall come after me. That's a little pride coming in here. Let the guy enjoy what you have. Like, what are you going to do, Solomon? Take it with you? You're going to be like those pyramid guys in Egypt where you're going to stuff your little sarcophagus with toys and trinkets and water jugs and whatever you need, condoms for the next life? Come on. Let the guy have some fun. This I disagree with. Turn it over to the next guy. What do you care? You're going to die in sleep. Surely you know what death is. I know you do because in chapter 9, you said the dead know nothing. And I go to this verse all the time. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, I believe it is. The dead do not know anything. That's fantastic. Now, what is this? What is this? You're upset that you're going to leave your stuff to somebody else? What? You want to take all your concubines with you? You're not going to be able to use them in the afterlife. This isn't some Muslim reward system here. So don't. It's not going to be concubines, virgins, or raisins, as we discussed in earlier time. This too is vanity. Yeah, true enough. Oh, here's what you say in verse 19. Yet he shall have authority over all the fruit of my toil, for which I toiled. Let him have it. What kind of a control freak are you? He shall have authority over all the fruit of my toil? So what? You're going to be asleep, and the next thing you know, you're going to wake up and be walking into Jerusalem. And your son's going to be on the throne, and he's probably going to give you the vice presidency, or you're going to have a nice position. Yeah, that's true. The 12 apostles will be there. You're not jealous of them, are you? I mean, yeah, the apostles, they were with Jesus Christ. You're not going to be upset about that, are you? You're going to have to take a chill pill when you wake up and realize that lots of people have had your stuff. The gold that you had is still circulating somewhere. Maybe they're gold coins right now. I don't know. Maybe some people have them on their wedding bands. There's only so much gold in the world. And it gets reused and reused. And probably somebody maybe has a wedding band made of the same material with which you overlaid the Ark of the Covenant. I don't know. This too is vanity. What's vanity is your concern about it. I can't believe you're concerned about this. Who knows if he shall be a wise or a frivolous man? What does it matter? Well, okay, I kind of see this. You want the great tradition, the great Solomonic tradition, to pass on to the next generation. And it might be a foolish guy in charge of your stuff. But don't worry, he's going to die, and then the next guy might be good. It's the same with us, Solomon. We have the presidency. You know, we have the president of the United States who's replaced every 4 years. And if you don't like one, you wait 4 years, and God help you if that person's reelected. And then you get another person. So, you know, eventually you're going to get somebody who's passable. But, yeah. What concern is it of yours? Again, I ask. This too is vanity. That's true. So I turned around again with despair in my heart. Maybe time to order those wine waitresses. Over all the fruit of toil for which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose fruit of toil is in wisdom and in knowledge and in success. Yet to another man who has not toiled for it, he must give it as his portion. There you go again with the jealousy thing. Or whatever it is. Stop it. This too is vanity and a great evil. I don't know. It's this average evil. It's a so-so evil. It's kind of an evil. I wouldn't call it a great evil. For what is coming to a man for all his toil and for the shepherding of his heart, which he is toiling under the sun? For all his days, pains and vexations are his experience. Now you're coming back to reality. I'm almost done with this chapter, ladies and gentlemen. Then we're going to move on to the protocols of the elders of Zion, which is a forgery, but which is still gives us light into the sitch. That's funky slang talk for situation. For what is coming to a man? Yes, okay. All his days, pains, vexations are his experience. Nothing's changed, boy. Even in the night, his heart will not lie still. This too is vanity. Sometimes that happens. I suggest a mild tea, a chamomile tea. Do not drink a lot of water after 2 p.m. because then you will have to go to the bathroom, and that will cause your heart to not lie still during the night. And I don't recommend watching the news before you go to bed or a scary movie. That's just my suggestion. Yes, where are we now? Yes, there is nothing better for a man than that he should eat, drink, and cause his soul to see good from his toil. Well, there's something better. It's called an expectation. And you had one, but you didn't have our expectations. So maybe that kind of watered down your enthusiasm a little bit for life. You didn't have the same expectation that we have, members of the body of Christ. You don't know about Jesus Christ. Well, we'll talk after the show. Solomon. This too, I see that it is from the hand of Elohim. Okay, well, there's a bright spot that eating and drinking and causing one's soul to see good from toil, that is from the hand of Elohim. And yet, if that is your only thrust, your only thing, your only hobby in this life, then you are in trouble indeed. And it is an evil, and it is vanity. This too I see from Elohim. I gotta say that again, because it's so good. For who can eat and who can hurry to it outside of him? Not sure I understand that statement. One more verse. For to the man who is well-pleasing before him, he gives wisdom, knowledge, and rejoicing. Yet to the sinner, he gives the experience of gathering and of collecting together to give it to one who is well-pleasing before the one Elohim. What? This too is vanity and grazing on wind. Let me read this again. It didn't make sense to me. It seemed to me you were saying the sinner has it better than the guy who's trying to live according to God's dictates. Let's see, which would have been you. You were under law. For to the man who is well-pleasing before him, he gives wisdom, knowledge, and rejoicing. Okay, I like that. That's good. Yet to the sinner, he gives the experience of gathering and of collecting together to give it to one who is well-pleasing before the one Elohim. Well, you were worried earlier about passing it on anyway to somebody else. All right, that's beyond me. Before this show ends, I have to go to the last verse of Ecclesiastes, because you've seen how depressing this is. And there's nothing new under the sun. All is vanity. Let's go to the last two verses of the whole book in the last minute of this show. The terminus of the whole matter has been heard. The end. Here it is. Here's the conclusion. Fear the one, Elohim, and keep his instructions. I know that's your world. I appreciate that. I'm making adjustments in my head for the fact that I don't have to follow the law. I don't expect you to have known that. I don't blame you for writing what you did. My equivalent of that would be to grow in grace, grow in wisdom and realization of the truth of Paul's evangel, which is the grace of God. And you're not going to believe this, but we do not have commandments to follow. And I know that may make you think that we're a bunch of lawless people. We're a bunch of troglodytes. We're a bunch of anarchists. But that is not the case. We find that the lack of law and the love of God, which is shed abroad in our hearts, is actually a more powerful force to keep us from the wiles of the flesh than is law. And I might say you're a pretty good example of that, Mr. 500 Concubines. So, although the law said thou shalt not have, the law did not say thou shalt not have concubines, true. So maybe I'm overstepping my bounds there to say that it was perfectly legal in your day, but 500? Maybe all this talk about giving your toil to another person vexed you to the point that you reached out in frustration to concubinage, which is the art of having concubines. All right. For this is the whole duty of humanity. Last verse. For the one Elohim shall bring every deed into judgment concerning all that is obscured, whether good or whether evil. And I'm glad of that. I'm glad of that. Thanks be to God that everything that is now obscured, even for us in this day of illumination, of no filters between God and us and the heart of God and us, there are still things that we don't know. And there are still things about ourselves that we don't know and about other people. Everything that is now hidden will be opened up. And I can't wait for that. I am ready. And I know, Solomon, you would be of the same disposition, that all that you have is open before the eyes of God. So why not have it open before the whole world? We are who we are. We are human beings. We're doing the best we can on this veil of tears, just as you did, Solomon. And you, my listeners and viewers, you're doing the best you can. And together we struggle through this life. And I have a feeling, thanks to God and Christ, that we're going to make it.